Your partner just left their coffee cup on the counter again. You've asked them 100 times to put it in the dishwasher. Your blood pressure rises, your jaw clenches. Before you know it, you're not discussing a coffee cup anymore. You're relitigating every thoughtless thing they've done for the past decade. Sound familiar? Here's the uncomfortable truth. In that moment, you've literally forgotten you love this person. Your brain has transformed your partner from beloved companion into mortal enemy, and you're both operating from a part of yourselves that's about 7 years old. This isn't a character flaw. It's neurobiology meeting unhealed wounds. When we're triggered, our prefrontal cortex, the rational, mature part of our brain, goes offline while our limbic system floods us with stress hormones. We lose the crucial pause between feeling and action. The us evaporates, replaced by adversarial you versus me. We're no longer two adults trying to build a life together. We're wounded children fighting for survival. The question isn't whether you have these moments. Everyone does. The question is, which part of you shows up when conflict arrives? When hurt or scared in your relationship, notice who you become. Do you withdraw into silence? Explode with cutting words? Become controlling? You've just met your adaptive child, the immature ego state you developed to cope with childhood pain. This survival strategy, cobbled together when you were too young to know better, now sabotages your adult relationships. The adaptive child operates through black and white thinking, perfectionism, and physical tension, mistaking rigidity for strength and certainty for wisdom. Meanwhile, your wise adult, capable of nuance, forgiveness, flexibility, and warmth, sits sidelined. Most people have such limited access to their wise adult that they mistake their adaptive child's extremes for virtues, thinking walls make them strong or explosions make them honest. Consider Paul, who insisted he had a normal, happy childhood and never needed comfort. He prided himself on self-reliance until his wife Cheryl threatened to leave over his emotional distance. The truth? As a small child, Paul reached out for solace, but his parents' response taught him that depending on them was dangerous. He shut down completely, a smart adaptation for a helpless child, but devastating for an adult building intimacy. You can't be surgical with emotions. If you open to one, they all come flooding in. We've been sold a lie that we're distinct individuals, separate from each other and the world. But where do you actually end? When you hold your partner's hand during a difficult moment, whose nervous system is calming down, yours or theirs? Both. Research reveals that intimate partners literally co-regulate each other's stress hormones, immune responses, and neural activity. Your brain doesn't just exist in your skull, it extends into your relationships. Social baseline theory shows our brains conserve energy by offloading functions onto others. The prefrontal cortex, that expensive, energy-hungry mainframe for rational thought, actually slows down during social interaction. We're not working harder to manage emotions together. The stress simply doesn't arise as much when we're connected. This is why holding a stranger's hand reduces pain, a friend's hand works better, and a loved one's hand provides the strongest relief. Yet Western culture worships independence. We celebrate the self-made person who needs no one, making skilled relationality nearly impossible. We prioritize personal rights over collective well-being, see asking for help as weakness, value autonomy over interdependence. Then we wonder why we're lonely, why relationships feel like battlegrounds. The problem isn't you. It's that you're trying to build intimacy in a culture designed to keep you isolated. Trauma isn't something we remember, we relive it. When triggered, the past superimposes onto the present, activating fight or flight responses. Joey's story illustrates this perfectly. When his wife Linda withdraws, Joey's 7-year-old self takes over. The child who learned, there's no one to tell, no one who cares about my story. He's not responding to Linda, he's responding to every abandonment he ever experienced. Trauma creates injury, and we develop coping strategies to survive. Those strategies become our adaptive child. Some people react against their trauma. Those with intrusive parents build thick walls. Those with abandoning parents become clingy. Others model their trauma, identifying with the aggressor and repeating dysfunctional patterns. Most of us do both. Ryan's mother was intrusive and controlling, his father withdrawn and passive. Ryan identified with his dad, learning passive resistance. Now, when his partner reaches for closeness, Ryan instinctively pulls away, mistaking connection for intrusion. He's not rejecting his partner, he's protecting himself from a threat that no longer exists. Until we recognize these patterns, we remain trapped, fighting childhood ghosts, while our actual partner stands confused and hurt before us. Jim refuses to change diapers or fix the broken window screens, despite his wife Britt's exhaustion and frustration. When confronted, he defends his right to spend his free time as he chooses. He's not being intentionally cruel. He genuinely believes his individual freedom matters more than their collective well-being. This is rugged individualism in action, the Enlightenment-era thinking that treats personal rights as sacred and any request from a partner as an encroachment on liberty. Meanwhile, Britt represents romantic individualism, the emotional, expressive approach that values authentic self-expression above all. She wants to voice her feelings, to be heard and validated. Neither realizes they're speaking different languages, both rooted in the same toxic individualism that prioritizes me over us. They're not a team. They're two separate entities negotiating territory, defending boundaries, keeping score. Jim's passive-aggressive behavior stems from his traumatic childhood with an abusive mother and absent father. His dad taught him survival strategies. Give her wide berth, lie when necessary, present a false smile while never truly yielding inside. These tactics kept him safe as a child. Now they're destroying his marriage. But Jim can't see this because he's thinking like an individual, not a partner. His internal slogan might as well be, "Don't tread on me," prioritizing his rights and freedoms above everything, including the person he promised to love. Rick walks into therapy with a blunt goal. I'd say we hit it out of the park if somehow, somewhere, between the two of us, we managed to get me laid. He complains that his wife, Joanna, is naturally cold sexually, a trait he attributes to her WASP upbringing. When Joanna arrives for her session, she counters with equal bluntness. Rick is a terrible lover. His idea of foreplay is a public service announcement that he's horny. Both suffer from chronic individualism disorder. Each sees the other's behavior as reflecting an unchangeable essence rather than a relational dynamic. If she's just frigid, he's just a child. Neither realizes they're connected like a seesaw. Rick is the heavy guy demanding Joanna come down, never realizing he could change his own position. When they're brought together, the focus shifts from individual rights